Welcome to the City Council meeting. This is the City of Arroyo Grande, and it is Tuesday, October 22nd. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Here. Item three is our flag salute. We're very pleased to have Madeline here from the Arroyo Grande Kiwanis Club, and she's going to do our flag salute for us. If you would, please remain standing after the flag salute. For our invocation, Reverend Valerie Hart from St. Barnabas Episcopal Church is here to do that for us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Creator of the universe, send down upon those who hold office in the city of Arroyo Grande the spirit of wisdom, charity, and justice, that with steadfast purpose they may faithfully serve in their offices. Help all those gathered here this evening the ability to speak the truth with love and open hearts to listen to one another, so the decisions made this evening promote the well-being of all people. Amen.
Reverend, thank you very much. Appreciate you being here tonight. And Madeline, let's hear about Kiwanis.
Oh, yes. We have a lot going on. In fact, we currently donated 65 dolls to the Arroyo Grande Hospital. We continue to mail boxes to our troops. We maintain a clothing bin at Albertsons for the Children's Resource Network. Currently, we do monthly the Adopt a Highway on Highway 1, and we're continuing to work cleaning up the creek here in the village. And our first fundraiser in the village will be with McClintock's. They've been kind enough to open up their restaurant for us on Wednesday, November 13th. It's a great fundraiser to be. And, of course, we got our Christmas parade and decorating the Grand Avenue with Christmas garland. We're going to be doing that, and our senior outreach to the seniors at the melodrama, and lastly the Salvation Army bell ringing. So we have a lot going on.
Good. We're very grateful for all the hard work Kiwanis does, and thanks for being here tonight, and hope you'll come back again. Okay. Okay, moving on this evening, 5 is agenda review. 5A is closed session announcements. The council did meet in closed session on Tuesday, October the 8th. We discussed two issues related. One was the performance evaluation for our city manager, Steve Adams. And while we have no reportable action, I do want to say that Steve is still with us. You can see him sitting over there. So everything's working out fine. We're glad to have him. And then the other issue related to the performance review was a labor issue. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Moving on to item 6 on the agenda, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters not posted on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less. Please address the council as one body. Once again, community comments and suggestions. Good evening, Brad.
Good evening, Mayor. Brad Snook. Citizen of Arroyo Grande and also the chair of Surf Rider San Luis Obispo County. Brought with you a couple copies of latest developments going on in our chapter. Kind of spread these around. We had Sarah, our Rise Above Plastics coordinator for our campaign and Surf Rider. She weaves together used plastic bags and makes bikinis and bags and stuff out of them. So it's a really good reuse tool. And so I brought you guys a picture of Sarah's photo shoot with the bag monster chasing the girls in bikinis on the beach. And I wanted to make clear that the bottom picture is me at the State Lands Commission meeting a couple of weeks ago in Sacramento. A real thrill and a real treat to get up there to Sacramento and do that. So I was glad to represent the chapter and also our county in presenting an issue to the state that was a real issue for our environment. We had two events last weekend. The peer-to-peer paddle was from Avila to Pismo Beach Pier, and we had 48 participants, raised about a little over $1,000 by the time we take cost out, and all that money would go to our county junior lifeguard programs, and they use that for scholarships to get some people into the programs during the summers. And I understand there's a new program in Oceano as well, so they're trying to grow that. Then we had our free fall at the Avila Beach Community Center, and a great time. The Dentures played, two other bands. Jeff Pinak, our former chair, his band played. That's called Project Rocco. And also Joey and the Troublemakers, Joey Ricano from Morro Bay. So we had some great art. Forever Stoked was there, and Firestone was born 805. I also have on the back of those sheets some questions for when you get on later on regarding the next council member. So kind of snuck those in if you have a chance to work those in. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Quick question, Brent.
And Sarah actually created that costume herself and then asked her boyfriend, who's our chapter treasurer, to put it on and chase the girls around the beach. So that's how that picture happened. Thank you.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Community comments and suggestions? Okay, seeing no one, we'll close item 7. And we'll move on to item 8. This is our consent agenda. This is normally a group of items that the council approves in one action, unless there is an item on the consent agenda that a member of the council would like further clarification on or an independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward on any of the items on consent. This evening, if you're following along on the agenda, we're going to be addressing consent items 8A through 8F. So we'd first like to invite the public, if there's anyone in the audience who would like to come forward on any of the consent items, this would be an opportunity. Once again, 3 minutes or less. Anyone? Okay, seeing no one, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda. We'll bring it back to the council. What is the will of the council this evening? Is any item on consent to pull? All right, there are no items to pull. I'll entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8F.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Anything to read in there tonight, Tim?
No, Mayor Farrar.
Okay, thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Moving on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The City Council last considered the housing element update in December of 2011. Since then, the State Department of Housing and Community Development, which is HCD, has reviewed the document and responded with recommended changes to meet statutory requirements. Staff has revised the housing element in response to HCD's concerns. As a brief introduction, the housing element contains information about the needs assessment, which boils down to the city's fair share of regional housing need as determined by the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, an analysis of the city's resources to aid housing development, which includes land availability, infrastructure, and financial resources, analysis of constraints to housing development, including those imposed by the city in the form of regulations or environmental constraints, a review of how well the city implemented the previous housing element, and then finally, the policy program, which is the core of the document that explains how we intend to meet our goals of providing sufficient housing according to our needs assessment. Staff has had multiple conversations with HCD over the last year and a half in the form of conference calls, one-on-one calls, emails, and formal letters. The March 2012 letter from HCD that is included in the staff report was the template that staff worked off of to gain compliance with state law. HCD concerns centered on three main areas, which include housing adequately address special housing needs, such as emergency shelters, promote redevelopment of underutilized properties and lot consolidation, and promote equal housing opportunities. The third issue required an analysis of moderate and above moderate income groups in our quantified objectives. In response to HCD concerns, staff has made considerable amendments to the housing element, which are listed and explained more in the staff report. The Planning Commission reviewed the revised draft housing element last month and recommended approval to the City Council. One of the main issues the Planning Commission discussed was program G1-3, which allows development of five or more multiple family attached units with a minor use permit in an effort to streamline the process per HCD's direction. Currently, a conditional use permit is required, which HCD considers to be a governmental constraint. So they would like for us to implement this to promote affordable housing. The commission agreed with staff that the city might want to include design guidelines as part of the development code amendment for this program. So it's been a long process, but we are finally at the end of this housing element update cycle with public review and adoption. If approved, the document and signed council resolution will be sent to HCD for certification, which can take up to 90 days. In the meanwhile, it's time to start our next housing element update. The good news is that it shouldn't take much, though. So to provide additional information and to help us answer questions, we do have Lisa Wise in the audience tonight, and she was the consultant that helped us in this effort. So I'd ask Lisa to come up to the podium and direct questions to both her and us.
Okay. Questions on the staff report?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a question about... I get yelled at if I don't pull my mic up here. I have a question about what Planning Commission is recommending in terms of the minor use permit versus conditional use permit. Were you part of that recommendation, and what's your take on what's happening statewide on that issue?
Can you give me a little bit more background on the question in terms of the minor use permit?
The one that she just put up on the slide about the...
As Kelly explained, the commission...
Teresa, is your mic on?
It is. Yeah. Too far away. There we go. The Planning Commission, when they're reviewing the housing element at their meeting, asked, you know, of course, a series of questions. And this was one issue we wanted to bring it to your attention, that they had some concerns in that allowing a potential five or more multifamily attached housing apartment project, for example, to be approved with only a minor use permit instead of a conditional use permit. Again, our development code to implement this policy and change that requirement from a conditional use permit to a minor use permit for such projects, to go ahead and consider design guidelines along with that, the requirement of design guidelines. So just an extra, here we are trying to remove an obstacle, but a simple set of design guidelines to ensure that these projects will look nice and fit in with our existing neighborhoods.
I guess my question is, I look at the project on Cortland that we just approved and is getting built. Is that an example of what would fall under here?
Potentially, yes.
I'd like some explanation from someone about how doing that. I understand that getting rid of the bureaucratic red tape. I get all that. But that project went, we spent some energy on that project to get it right. And it's to put it to a minor use permit where one person or two people or staff is making decisions that, you know, have a long-term effect for a project that size. I'm just questioning.
Yes, and therein lies a concern. And before I let Lisa respond, that one in particular was it was in a specific plan, so it wouldn't have been that one location wouldn't have been able to be allowed with a minor use permit. But
that type of project would have.
Larger attached apartment projects could, under this policy and the implementation of that policy, could be approved. Yes, and Lisa may want to add on some.
Yeah, so this is something the state's been doing statewide, all 500-plus cities and counties looking to require that. In addition, it could be subject to design review, so you could put that in place to have a little bit of stopgap. I'm not sure how big the Cortland project is. How much? 36 units. I mean, in your next housing element update, what you could do is consider a maximum. A minor use permit is from 5 to 50. And then over 50 was a little bit bigger threshold. I wouldn't recommend tampering with the language necessarily tonight since you have a certified letter. You'd have to kind of go back through the process, but you're going through an update again soon. If you wanted to kind of keep that on the to-do list, it could be something that staff could go back and revisit at that time, because I hear what you're saying. I mean, there might be projects that are big enough that would warrant more review, so you could, a minor use permit could be a certain threshold, and then it could trigger a conditional use permit.
Okay, but something you just said kind of alarmed me and concerned me. You're basically saying the recommendation by Planning Commission is already part of the certified document in front of the state, and we can't alter that. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying you have a clean letter from the state with the document as it is, and if you make any significant modifications, we would need to go back to the state and notify them that we revised it. And the adoption process. I'm not saying it's set in stone. You have the option tonight to make changes to it. But when we resubmitted to the state, we'd have to notify them of any revisions for them to consider when they certify it.
That's all, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Well, let me ask a follow-up question. Just refresh my memory. Is what they're saying with regard to the minor use permit, is that in the housing legislation? Or is this verbal or written guidance that they're giving?
And just if you could clarify for me, what exactly are the differences between a minor use permit process and the conditional use process? And what's the difference in fees?
Well, the difference in fees is about $1,000. The difference in process is that a CUP requires a public hearing and a minor use permit does not. That's the main difference.
And minor use permits are approved by the community development director, appealable to the planning commission, on up to the city council. A conditional use permit would be approved in most circumstances at the planning commission level, unless it's in a PD or something where it would come to you for final approval.
So realistically speaking, if we were to go forward with the minor use permit, the only real difference would be the fee. Because we still have the right to appeal it and bring it up.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Minor use permit, is it, since there's no public hearing, is it going to be noticed to the neighbors?
No. Generally, they're not noticed to the neighbors in advance. They are put on our Planning Commission agenda as a list of administrative approvals, and the Planning Commission generally looks and can pull those for questions if they deem.
That was my next question, was whether the notice is part of that Planning Commission I know we're talking about changing a little bit, but that is part of that planning commission process that they get to look at all these decisions.
States assumes that where you've already identified locations for multifamily, that's where you want multifamily housing. So, you know, maybe that needs to be revisited a little bit in the city. I'm not sure, you know, how far that extends, but I think that's the thinking also, is that these are areas where you want multifamily to go in, so there shouldn't be a lot of surprises.
That's another question. Well, there's a lot of incentives that are built into our code as well. Would they then be covered by this minor use permit, where they are getting reduced parking, or they're getting reduced setbacks, or they're getting extra height or extra units based on one of the incentives that are also in here? Is it now past multifamily?
Staff may be able to answer that more directly, because I'm not sure of all the ins and outs of the code completely, but if it was, if those incentives were available to the site and to the project could apply for those incentives. So affordable project got a parking reduction, and the applicant could apply for those. It's usually the way it goes.
So let me make sure I understand what we're saying we can do then with this MUP is at some point in the very near future put in place design guidelines that at least put some structure or some teeth back into the process. And can we also kind of enhance the procedures for MUPs specifically for this to the extent of and I know it's going to go on the Planning Commission's agenda as an administrative item, but is there any way that at the same time?
In the development code amendment that we would bring forward in the future to implement this, I believe we can certainly, when we're requiring some set of design guidelines, to add in a noticing requirement, a neighborhood noticing requirement. And I'm not sure how, but I believe that we could certainly notify the council of any large multifamily projects at that time as well.
Okay, and then I'm curious, and it's probably in here and I didn't see it, but looking at on page 2 of the staff report, going back to November of 2011, when the Planning Commission reviewed this, there were some concerns about relaxing the parking requirement. Whatever happened to that?
There are incentives that are listed with regards to parking and fees and things of that nature. But again, all of these would have to go back through the commission and the council to do development code amendments. So you'll get a second chance to really look at it and think it through and making sure that it's written correctly in the way that we want.
Okay. And then last question. And again, I didn't get all the way through this housing element draft, but there's also mention in the same paragraph about okay, any other questions? All right, seeing none, once again, this is a public hearing. If there is anyone who would like to come forward on this item, this would be an opportunity. Anyone? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing. We'll bring it back to the council. And we will start with Council Member Guthrie.
Well, I do remember, of course, from a year and a half, 2 years ago that we reviewed this. It is unfortunate that we're going to be in the cycle. I didn't think it was quite that quick that we were going to have to start all over again almost as soon as we finish. It really does demonstrate how difficult this is. But I have concerns about this as well, because this is written kind of backwards. Typically, you would see, rather than a five or more, you would see five or fewer. And here, we're saying we're exempting all the big projects that communities would be concerned about. I also think that in past housing elements, we've increased our densities in order to meet this perceived housing requirement. That we increased our densities. sort of on the assumption that we could handle this in review, there are places where three stories might be available, there are places where, you know, 15 units per acre might work, but there are places where it might not. And so simply because we changed it to multifamily and then increased the density on top of that doesn't necessarily mean that large projects like the one that's on Cortland would work in a lot of locations. So certainly feels like another one of the state's tricks where they get you to do one thing on one day and then the next day they basically change the game. I'm still confident in our review process that we have housing to be built. There's not a lot of risks out there, both from an economic standpoint, but also just from unless there's significant lot consolidation, which I know is another subject of the housing element. The difficulty of lot consolidation, I think, is going to restrict the number of these quite a bit. So I'm confident that we can put this in place. I do think the design guidelines are a good one. The neighborhood notification, if we can do that, that's a good one, too, because, you know, certainly that's one of our key elements is that you aren't just sitting there and all of a sudden they build a three-story building on your fence line. And we certainly want the opportunity to review that. So I'm confident on this particular issue that we can handle this in our current process if they don't take that away from us in the next round. The other changes, I think, are awkward. I'll just call them all, you know, trying to find a way to identify exactly how many units would be built on every unit when the economics of changes all the time. And the whole incentives program, as I mentioned, changes things constantly. What incentives might be used on one project versus another changes the project significantly because there are significant incentives for providing what we already require. So I'm still confident going forward with this. I think the alternative is not to have our housing element approved has more negatives than has more risk to it than this does. So I can support this evening.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I have a very quick clarification.
Yeah.
Just on the question of the density bonuses and the waiver of development standards for projects, that does have to go to the Planning Commission. I just want to be clear on that. So that would have to
be, I think. And I do think it should read something to the effect of allow development of, let's say, 15 units or less. I think we should cap it. And even the consultant said we could do some tiered process if we wanted to. And that's what I'm suggesting. This just seems backwards, like Councilman Guthrie said, and I'm very uncomfortable with it. I've seen what's happened with notice issues in the past, and I've seen people come up at late stages of development and just be very, very unhappy with us and with staff and with the developer and everybody else. And so I'm not as confident as Mr. Guthrie is about that we're going to be able to get public notice out there to the people, things that we may not be concerned about, but the local neighborhood might be. So I would suggest a change of putting a cap on it, and we could still meet the spirit of what it's supposed to be doing, and I'd be a lot more comfortable with it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, I tend to agree with what Mr. Guthrie said. I think the process we have in place would protect us, but we'd have to stay on top of this and be alert to what was coming down the pike. I guess the question I'd have is if we're going to change the language, as Tim Brown suggests, what does that do to the process?
I suspect that the specific language that Councilman Brown offered would perhaps hold up and go through that. Or again, as Lisa had suggested, hitting it in our very next upcoming cycle. And you know, it's either way we could address it as suggested with the design guidelines and the noticing and of course any deviations going to Planning Commission, and then you know, perhaps cap it at a later cycle.
I'd be comfortable going forward with this tonight under those provisions with the suggestion that we look very carefully in the next cycle at whatever changes we need to make. So I'll support this tonight.
Okay, thank you. You know, I think if you look back at the minutes of the meetings historically, I think some of us were not pleased when the housing legislation was first published. It was a sorry attempt at a one-size-fits-all policy that we're supposed to somehow integrate into our environment here, and it's been challenged by so many cities in so many different ways. You know, we can see what happens here. This is, for the benefit of the public, this is the only element of our general plan that requires state approval. And without that, we don't have a certified general plan. And so, I mean, in a sense, it's a shame to use the cliche, but in a sense, we have to play of the housing legislation. It is that there are sections in there that are specific to the ability of a local municipal government to consider constraints. And I think all of those things wrapped into design guidelines and noticing procedures, if that's something we can put in place, that's probably as close as we're going to get. If we change the language and send it back to a staffer up there, we're going to look at more delays and more delays and more costs associated with that. And I'm not sure that that they won't kind of force feed this in the same way back to us. So I think we can pick up the pieces here and make this work for us. One thing I am concerned about is making sure that that we're clear enough in those guidelines that the council has ample opportunity to at least know that these things are coming through the pipe, and so that if we do have concerns, we can at least kind of energize that appeal process if we need to. So I guess what all that means is I guess I'm all right with moving forward with this tonight. There's a resolution on page 14 of the staff report, and if we're going to make a motion, I'm hoping the motion maker will also integrate into that motion the additional work that we're going to do with the design guidelines and perhaps some procedural guidance and the noticing.
So that you would recommend the resolution and direct staff to bring forward alternatives, including design guidelines and noticing procedures with implementation of policy number G1-3.
And I'll make the motion. That we adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande approving general plan amendment number 11-002 and adopting an initial study negative declaration, housing element update for the 2007 to 2015 regional housing needs assessment, RHNA cycle, with the addition of the design language regarding the design guidelines and noticing procedures.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Now, discussion.
I just want to point out what the mayor said, and that is, this is not part of housing law, and yet we're treating it as though it is, and that's disturbing to me, that we're allowing the state to tell us what we need to be doing when it's not part of housing law. We're being dictated to from on high with no real true basis. I understand the spirit behind what they're doing, and I don't necessarily disagree with it long term, but the way this came down, where it goes through Planning Commission and it gets put in front of council, and we're left in a position where, oh, guess what? You're on a deadline, so you just have to say yes. And, oh, by the way, it's not part of housing law, but we still have to do it. I find that really disturbing. So I just want to go on record. Thank you.
For what it's worth, I think we all feel that way. Okay, we have a motion. Any other consideration of questions for council applicant forum? Kelly, before you leave, thanks. We appreciate all the hard work that went into this. It's we know what it's like trying to deal with the state. So, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. At the last meeting, the City Council provided direction to staff on the desired process for filling the current council vacancy that became open as a result of Councilmember Ray's appointment to the County Board of Supervisors. As part of that process, which is designed to obtain as much public involvement and feedback as possible, we have included a forum for the public to be able to ask questions to each of the applicants. That forum has been scheduled for next Tuesday, the 29th, at 6 o'clock p.m. at the City of Aurora Grandy and Women's Club Community Center, and it will be facilitated by the League of Women Voters. During the last time we went through this process, the council provided three pre-prepared questions to add to the forum. The remainder of the forum is then made up of questions that are received from people attending the forum that evening. So at this point, we're coming back to council just to simply get direction on what each person submit one. So there's a number of ways to go about it, but last time the council agreed amongst the council for three questions that were submitted.
Why don't we start and just kind of keep this kind of loose. Tim, why don't we start with you, and let's talk about whether or not you like what's in place. If not, what do you think we should have in place of some of the other questions that exist?
I answered those questions myself. I like the questions. I think they were good questions. I'd like to continue with that. I would like to add to it, though, and I haven't quite formulated a question, but it would have to do with something about describe what your current community involvement is, or somehow describe how you're involved with the local community, in what way. Other than that, I'm pretty comfortable with where it's at.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, I don't have additions to that. I think I've been included everybody's intro, but you're formalizing is not a bad idea.
I agree. I think that the three questions that we had cover a good spectrum, get someone's perspective on what they see the important issues as being, talks about the finances of the city, and then talks about what you might want to protect, which gets to the person's philosophy. So I think these are good questions. I've got no objection to adding in something that Tim's suggesting that we get in there. I think that those are probably going to be answered just when the person gives their background. Certainly it wouldn't hurt to have it be a more formalized question.
Yeah, the only thing that that I'd like to add is that then were financial challenges. And so when they got to the financial priorities, there was some spillover there. And so I guess I'm looking at potential for repetition in those two questions. But, you know, whatever is you know, you're all comfortable with, the question that I would like to, I'm sorry? Okay, the question that I would like to see here is something that relates to experience, strengths, contributions. What does a candidate feel they could bring in the way of skill sets and experience to the council? However, we could work that in. And so if we can do something like that, I'd be happy with the majority of what we have here.
Is there some way we could tighten up the questions that we had from last year that you'd be more comfortable with?
Well, maybe if we change financial to budget priorities and then left the three important issues in, at least that takes, financial challenges out of the three most important
right,
issues.
Right, got it.
How does that take that out? I would think that if we were to say, what do you consider two or three important...
distances the whole financial issue from perhaps other more material challenges. I'm not sure how well it does that.
I could see someone answering the budget questions, but then coming back and saying, but I still think that this is one of the most important... This is a budget issue, but it's one of the most important issues facing the city.
Right.
So they're going to hit it both ways anyway.
Okay, then let me ask this question. How comfortable would you be about taking the financial piece out of there altogether?
I would hope everyone would address that anyway, but I do think that that's a key thing that any council candidate needs to be aware of and needs to be keyed into is probably still our number one issue that we're dealing with. It's certainly less than it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, but it's we would want to make sure that candidates knew what they were getting into, I guess that's the way I'd put it, and we knew what they were getting, what they were bringing. So I would not want to see financial eliminated. I can see where financial bleeds out of budget into small business and, you know, family head of household jobs and those kinds of things that it can bleed out of financial and where you're trying to go with trying to get them to focus on the budget. So I can see how one would bleed out. I actually like the idea of saying, go ahead and split it. What are the three non-financial things? We'd actually ask them, what do you need to protect? And I would say 10 years ago, everybody knew what that was, what that question was asking, but that may not be true anymore. So saying, what are the three...
What are the three most non-budget related issues facing the city? And then, which one did you want to add?
Something to the effect of what's your current community involvement?
Okay, so current community involvement, and then would everybody be okay with adding the additional question of experience and skill set that someone could bring to the council?
You could actually combine the questions and put what are your skill set and blah, 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 and what have you, and how does that relate to how you...
Yeah, I have an example. You could say, describe your experience, involvement in the city, and what strengths you believe you would bring to this position. Something like that.
I'm good with that.
That's fine.
Okay. Have we got all that?
Look up, Tom.
I didn't get yours, Steve. The three that are there now, we're going to modify. So one would be, what do you consider two or three most important non-budget related issues facing the city that you would help solve? Number two, we're keeping as is. And number three, we're going to strike the word.
Is that sufficient in terms of staff direction?
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Real quick, that can these two questions be included as part of the submittals to the...
We probably should have suggested that he attend the forum and ask these questions himself, but it's up to the council on whether they want to include those.
You know, I think what we can do with this is maybe we can get a hold of Brad, ask him, or if somebody from Surfriders is going to be at the forum, and if so... these two questions should be put on an index card, and we can go that route.
We'll contact him and make it clear to him that he should be there. Someone should be there to submit the questions.
Okay.
Well, that brings up the question, what about people that can't be there that have questions to be asked? Why is that any less valid in terms of putting it on an index card tonight versus that night? How does that make it a less valid question? He raised it in public comment at a meeting and said he wanted them considered. And what if, I don't know what his family situation is or whatever, and there might be other people that have questions they want, anyway, just a thought.
Okay. Well, that's what community forums are for, and hopefully they can make it or send somebody. If we contact Brad and nobody from Surf Riders can make it, then perhaps what we can do is get with the League of Women Voters and script a couple of cards, make sure these questions get in. Because you're right, if he took the time to be here and voice them, then we ought to figure out a way to get them in. And I think we can do it. Okay, we're going to move on to item 11A. This is new business. This is consideration of approval of the conceptual design plans for the corporation yard renovation. Jeff, good evening.
Good evening, Mayor Ferrara and members of the council. Jeff English, Public Works Director. And I'm excited tonight to present this report to you about the potential options for a Public Works yard, corporation yard renovation. This project is, let me get the slide going here. Corporation Yard was built in 1965. This project, tonight we are asking that the council approve the conceptual design plans for the Corporation Yard, authorize the Administrative Services Director to provide an additional $25,000 in funds for at the mid-year budget review, and to authorize staff to distribute requests for proposals for architectural and engineering services. The project goals, we have a number of them, were developed through a combination working with our department staff and with other departments to really meet our needs in the future. Currently, our building was built in the 60s, and it doesn't have adequate space. We have three different older buildings out at that site, and we have staff kind of pigeonholed in different locations within the buildings in inadequate office spaces. Document storage, we are currently storing our documents up in a small mezzanine that you literally have to crawl into and not appropriate for storage. It's a suitable break room and training facility. We do not have current accommodations for an appropriate training facility. Upgrading our restrooms and our facilities for ADA. None of our facilities are ADA compliant at this point. And then to use some of the funds to extend the life of our current structures. This is an aerial of the Corporation Yard. We looked at a variety of options at the Corporation Yard. One is to renovate the existing buildings. And there was some extensive work done a number of years ago looking at building a new, basically tearing down what we have on site and building new facilities, quite costly. After looking at the cost of and the possibility of renovating the existing spaces, we determined that the most cost-effective approach would be to add a standalone building for administrative staff and training rooms off to the side at the current site, and you can see that on the aerial photograph here. This is the space. It's located just to the east of the current building, right besides the entrance gate, reception area, small conference room, two supervisors' rooms, offices for our streets and landscape supervisor as well as our utilities supervisor, and then a meeting room. This would be built proposed to be built in standard stick frame construction. We believe that there's a very competitive environment right now for contractors in building just traditional stick frame construction. This is the building renovation plan for the existing building. And what we're proposing to do, and in these spaces located here, we're proposing to convert the existing office space and our lunchroom existing now into a men's and a separate women's locker room facility. Currently, we don't have separate facilities, and again, they're not handicap accessible. We are looking at some potential minor modifications to this plan, but essentially we'll take those spaces and renovate them into those appropriate facilities. As well, we're looking at adding an office space. This space at the end of the building right now, the office space in blue where the pointer is a storage room. Our plan is to bring our lead workers. They need a space to put some of their work and their assignments, and so we would renovate that space into that use. This is the building exterior, the elevation. This is the existing building to the right in the screen and Public Works divisions. We have our parks and streets staff located in one building now, our utilities staff located in another building. We've really been making an effort over the last few years to combine those staffs into one team that will go out and work on projects together. That coordination and communications is important. I consider this bringing those staff into one facility to be potentially transformative as well. Construction of separate men's and women's changing rooms and bathrooms will provide adequate office spaces, improve document storage, provide a lunchroom and training facility, as well as improving ADA compliance, and then extending the life of the current structures. We do anticipate painting all the buildings and doing some other improvements in the buildings as well. Potential disadvantages for this strategy is that it will limit funds if we build a separate facility that will accommodate our needs for the areas that I just mentioned. It will mean that we won't be able to put or will extend out the time at which we would need to potentially re-roof at some point or replace windows or do some other improvements to the existing buildings. It's our anticipated that those deferred maintenance items will be addressed, but will be addressed out in the future. There'll be some minor potential cost for utility increases. We aren't adding staff. We're not bridge. We use that space for the annual auction. We have lots of space for those uses, and we don't believe at this point that will negatively impact our activities. However, we will be using that space permanently. Project alternatives. Tonight, you can approve the conceptual plan as proposed by staff. Direct us to make some specific changes to the plan that was presented to you tonight. Direct staff to pursue replacement of the existing buildings. Again, that was proposed previously. That building is approaching 50 years in age, and it does have some deferred maintenance, and that may be an alternative for council to propose. And then direct staff to pursue a modular office building. Did put this in as an option. Modular buildings can be less expensive. I got a quote of about 10 to 15% less than the cost for the construction of the building. And we would save some money on administrative costs in engineering and design. However, you sacrifice longevity of the building, you sacrifice some quality issues as well, and some of the potential uses that we have may not be suitable for a modular-type building. And then finally, provide alternative direction to staff not listed here. Potential costs for this project with design and administrative costs, construction of existing offices into locker room space, and then a 10% contingency will be within our project budget. Again, staff's recommendation tonight is to ask the council to approve the design concepts. appropriate an additional $25,000 and then authorize staff to distribute requests for proposal for design services. Will that conclude my report and open it up for questions?
Questions?
Just one clarification. I wish I'd asked this earlier, but somewhere in the staff report, it mentions that we're bringing over one member that's currently over in the rec department building and bring them over into the yard, into an office space in the yard.
Yeah, we have a supervisor, Ron Simpson, who is our streets and landscapes supervisor. He is in a small office in what's commonly referred to as the Parks Building, the older Parks Building. And we would be bringing him in with the other supervisor and myself into one building. We wouldn't be bringing anybody over from the recreation department. We do have two staff who maintain the Soto Sports Complex, and those staff are already integrated into our department now, but nobody from recreation.
Okay, so what I'm referring to the rec building is probably the old part, the building that's over by the dog park. Is that the building that we're moving somebody from?
No. Let me go back to, I think I can do this. If we go to the aerial, take me a minute to page through this, and there's a lunchroom in that building. This is what's considered Building B. It houses what used to be the Parks shop, Parks, and that's where the office is of this gentleman.
And that was really just leading me to the other question, because I thought we were moving storage then over to that building all the way out of the corporation yard. But this is where we would move the storage to, is to
correct.
His old
office. Yeah, our document storage would be in that building as well.
Okay, correct. That's clarification one. Thank you.
Just one quick question for you, Jeff. If we don't have separate changing areas and locker rooms, what are we doing for the situation as it exists?
We have a single person bathroom, and so our female employee can dress in. We're not all getting dressed in the same room at the same time now. We do have areas where you can get dressed.
So we've created an area that allows for privacy.
Correct.
But it's less than ideal.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Jeff, I had a quick question on the finance aspect of this. We're talking 40 by 50 steel frame, and if you believe some of the advertisement that companies are doing these days, it does seem like that's a pretty high price to pay for steel frame construction. Are we talking about some sort of prefab building here, or what is the more specific configuration of it, and does that figure that we have in front of us, does that also...
I did look at steel frame construction as an option. There are maybe three or four companies in the county and outside the county that can do that work, and it's not as competitive, and steel prices are at a high point. That we believe that the cost for just standard wood-framed building is more competitive at this point, and we would attract some of the local contractors to potentially bid on this project and create a more competitive bidding environment if we design that type of building.
Can you look at attachment 5? Is that a typo then? It says 2,000 square foot. I thought it was an L, but it looks like another T at the end. STEET?
Yes, that is a typo. That was a previous version of this. When we first started to explore this option, it was my belief that the steel frame building, a prefabricated steel building, would be the cheapest route to go. We worked with the IBI, Craig Atkinson from IBI, who helped design the police station, and he did the cost analysis on the various types of construction and felt that that would be the cheapest way to go, was the more competitive environment of the standard wood-framed construction building. So that is incorrect, what's in that staff report.
Okay, so let me come back to my other question then. Does the line item amount there, does that include HVAC?
Electrical. Essentially, it will give us a finished building with flooring. It won't provide any of the furnishings. We do anticipate bringing all of their existing furniture into the building. We have cabinets. We are designing a building that will essentially be a frame and be finished, but all of the furnishings will be our existing furnishings. So I have a desk, and my desk will move over, and we have some cabinets that we're currently using for storing office supplies and things of that nature. So we will bring those over, and they're in relatively decent shape. So it provides everything except for furnishings, that square footage cost.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, this is not a public hearing, but anyone in the audience would like to come forward and comment on this item? This would be an opportunity. John, any comments? Okay. All right, we'll bring it back and start with Council Member Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate your presentation. There we go. I appreciate your presentation, as always. I'm ready to move forward. I think it's, I'm ready to move forward. That's all I'll say.
I'm sorry.
I'm ready to move forward.
Okay, good. Thank you. Council Member Guthrie.
I do think it's pointed out there, not only are the buildings old, they just don't fit the way we operate or even probably the way we've operated for a while. So I think, well, certainly can think of a lot of other things to spend this kind of money on. I do think that this is something that needs to happen and needs to happen real soon, so I can support going forward this evening as well.
And so I think let's go forward with this.
Well, and I concur. This is, I guess... making the best of what we have, and we have to work within our fiscal constraints, and this is a good plan. I think it's a thorough plan and one that will, at least for the short to midterm, satisfy our needs, and it's the best we can do with what we have. So I can move forward with it as well, and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move we approve the conceptual design plans for the Corporation Yard renovation project, authorize the Administrative Services Director to appropriate $25,000 as delineated for the project in the mid-budget review, and authorize staff to distribute request for proposal for the architectural engineering design and consultant services for the Corporation Yard renovation project.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. All right, we're going to move along to City Council reports. And I will go first with the SLOCOG and RTA. RTA has not met since the last report. SLOCOG has met, and there are a few items that I wanted to report. First and foremost, Caltrans finished their testing of different surface. Are busy at work right now on the entire segment. I'm trying to recall the exact figure, but I think it's going to be somewhere around a $2.5 million fix. I think the most important piece of that is that recognizing the procedure that they used before that was not successful, and also recognizing the benefit of this procedure, which hopefully will be somehow integrated into their paving strategies or philosophies in the future, so we don't have these do-overs at taxpayer expense. The other thing that we had a, once again, kind of a spirited discussion on was our legislative program, and there's been quite a bit of discussion about the role of SLOCOG in terms of publishing a legislative position on the myriad of bills that spin out of the legislature related to transportation and transportation funding. And so we actually had formed a subcommittee, and the subcommittee met. I guess the long and short of it is staff is back at the drawing board, and what we're trying to do is kind of separate the bills that I guess are purely related to the business of the COG versus those that are nice to know and may have political overtones that cause, I guess, for lack of a better term, polarization. Staff is back at the drawing board and kind of redrafting some of the things that we think are important for the COG to advocate for, and some that we can kind of let go on their own. So the other good news that that we have to share is we did review the STIP projects, and we are still, I think, set for 2016. The COG is now mentioning the Briscoe Interchange in the same breath as they're mentioning LOVR, and I think we have, what, $6.5, $6.7 million set aside for the COG share, and that's likely to increase when the final project submittal goes in, because there are going to be some additional costs associated, and the COG has indicated a willingness to find us a little more money. So happy about that. I'll come back to Briscoe in a minute. The Sanitation District Board meeting, I attended the last one. Jim, you subbed for me, I think, the meeting before. The I should indicate to you that, that you know, we're sort of back to business as usual at the Sanitation District, focusing on just some minor administrative issues, as well as continuing to look at ways to ensure the plan operates within the Bank of the West has a program that is specifically designed for special districts and purchasing programs for those districts. One thing that we do have now is a financial subcommittee that has formed. We brought in a consultant to look at a number of the fiscal challenges for the district. How do we implement our long-range plan that has a price tag of $35-plus million? What impact is that going to have on our fee structure? Looking at potential legislation which might augment some of the repetitive infrastructure that we need to put in place, and just kind of taking a soup to nuts, if you will, look at the finances of the district versus what our strategy is for improving the site and the operation now and into the future. So so we have a consultant on board along with staff, and then Debbie Peterson from Grover is the board's representative to that subcommittee as well. We did get a report back, and the first meeting, I guess, was very favorable and very well conducted, so we're looking for some good things to come out of that. The plan is operating well. We're staying within our discharge requirements. And Jim, did you want to add anything to that?
I'll just say the highlight of the other meeting was the shutting down the cogen plant in light of the other meeting.
Yeah. And it's a much better use of the methane. There are less things to break. We still don't know what the outcome of the litigation is going to be with the manufacturer of our cogen. I think I mentioned that previously, that we do have that going. Okay, and then the Briscoe Interchange Committee met as well. I'll put that under the other category, and Joe and I met with our consultant, Tony Harris, And we did have Mark on, our other consultant, on the conference line, and Teresa and Steve, and I'm trying to think who else was there. But anyway, the long and short of it is we're making progress through our PA and ED. We do have a bit of a continuing challenge with one of the staff folks at District 5, but I'm reasonably confident we have a workaround there. And so we agreed that we were, in fact, going to generate a letter to the director of Caltrans, and it may go to Sacramento, sort of outlining the money that we have spent to date, trying to satisfy some of the demands that Caltrans imposes on us. And in many cases, as I've indicated earlier, some of those impositions represent a clear double standard because they're not imposing them elsewhere. So I'm not quite sure what's going on, some of the other issues in behavior of that intersection. But anyway, I'm reasonably confident that we're moving forward, and it's nice to see our name in the funding queue at the COG. Okay, we will go to Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And first of all, for the APCD, while we continue to defend ourselves against the lawsuits over the air, the dust rule, we also have a number of people that live up on the Mesa that are becoming quite impatient with the lack of progress in solving the air problem. But we do continue to work with the park, the state off-site recreational vehicle area, to come up with the mitigation measures that are going to fill those needs. Hopefully we'll get there. I want to mention two other things, though. One issue in the last meeting we had was a memorandum of understanding with ConocoPhillips for cost recovery for work associated with the rail spur project that they've got going forward. They want to bring in, extend a rail spur that's up there and bring in crude oil and process it that way. This is just looking at the environmental issues there. I think this is a somewhat controversial issue, and we're nowhere near resolution on it. We're just looking at the air quality parts of that project, and that was one of the things we did. And then I also want to mention that since 1997, APCD has administered about $17 million in grant funds that have been provided to a number of different projects looking to help regulate and maintain the air quality, but we're also working as a cooperative entity with the people out there that are operating equipment that produces pollution, and we've done a lot over the years to help reduce that and provided grants to help fund replacement of buses and replacement of agriculture engines and such. For the Five Cities Fire Authority, I met last week. Not a whole lot to report there. Quarterly budget, we're right on track, and department continues to operate very efficiently, and hopefully we'll look forward to moving forward now with the attempt to get the engineering report done and then look at going to the public with a ballot.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, South County Area Transit has not met since my last report. The HSOC did meet. Unfortunately, I was unable to attend that, and at this point, they haven't set up any minutes yet, so I will report on that at the next reporting session.
Okay. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Waste Management Authority has not met. The RAC did meet, and they discussed a number of things, including what RAC's role was in review of basin management and policy development, and also regarding review of project environmental documents for individual projects. That was kind of a heated discussion. Obviously, there was a lot of discussion before the vote with the supervisors on what happened up in Paso Robles. That was another heated issue. I do want to give a shout-out to Teresa McClish for the work she's done. She's funding to do some things that will help Arroyo Grande specifically. We're not quite there yet, but we're headed that way. So that's my report.
Very good. All right, moving on to item 13, council communications. And we sort of have an expanded scope of the definition of council communication now. So any council communications?
I do have one thing, and maybe I'm jumping the gun, but whoever ends up on council taking Karen's position, Karen had a huge part of the workload when it comes to these other committees, and we should at least consider maybe rearranging things so the person doesn't just get totally inundated with different things. But just a thought.
Yeah, and we typically do that when we have a new person on council or when we do have an election and replace council members. In fact, we do that if we have the same council members. We always revisit our committee assignments. So I suspect we'll do that again. Well, I have a couple of things. Anything else? I have a couple of things. First off, I wanted to congratulate not only Roy Grandy and Bloom, but the Public Art Committee of Arroyo Grandy and Bloom, and representing the city now. And Trudy Jarrett is the chair of that. And I think kind of connected to the Harvest Festival was the rooster painting event. And I don't know if we reported back on that. So I know Joe and I are now proud owners of two of those roosters. And but they were just incredible projects that that were submitted. And so I wanted to congratulate our Public Arts Committee and effort. And along those lines, I have in hand an invitation to a forum. It's actually a breakfast, a networking breakfast for school, community, and business leaders to raise awareness and strengthen support for arts education in San Luis Obispo County schools. And excuse me, this is kind of co-sponsored by County Superintendent of Schools, and it's going to be at Cal Poly. And it's going to be on the 14th at 8 o'clock from 8 to 10 at the Performing Arts Center, Cal Poly University. I would attend this, but unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever, I don't know, I'm going to be in Seattle at the NLC, National League of Cities conference. So they're asking for some council representation from us. Anyone interested in attending that network breakfast? 14th. That's I think that's a Wednesday.
How about you, Joe? That's a Thursday.
Thursday? Okay. Communication. Okay, item 14, staff communication. Anything, Steve? All right. And item 15 is our final community comments and suggestions. Anyone have any comments? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to item 16, closed session. We do not have one this evening. And item 17 is adjournment. So thank you very much. We are adjourned.